Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. My guest is Richard Gomez, and he hails from the Dominican Republic. And he's been out here for quite a while. He's one of the graduates from Musicians Institute, and he was introduced to me by my good friend Monique Caravello, and they were classmates there. And before I get into his background, I just want to welcome him to the studio. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let me get your mic up a little louder so I can hear you. There you go.
Pleasure is mine, and thank you for inviting me.
Anyway, he very interesting career. He's been a session musician. When he was at the Musicians Institute, he studied under Joe Pass, Scott Henderson, and Joe DiOrio, and also one of my good friends that's been on the show too, Les Wise. And so he studied there. And he's done a lot of session work for Warner Brothers, Sony International, Walt Disney, played with Ricky Martin. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a look at some of the music that he's done. He has a CD that came out, All You Need, but he gave me some clips of some very interesting stuff that he does. Let me ask you real quick before I play the opening clip. Okay. How would you describe yourself stylistically as a guitarist? Are you more of a jazzer or are you more of a classical flamenco?
I would call myself an international guitarist. I kind of like to listen to all kinds of music from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest influence came from Europe in the beginning. My mm-hmm. father was an accordion player, and I used to listen.
Oh, interesting. I started on accordion. I know that instrument very, very well.
So when I was I start my career when I was like 8 years old, playing in big stadium.
Oh, wow.
You know, Dominican Republic is famous for the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of baseball players coming from Dominican. And I'm a huge baseball fan. And my father used to take me to the baseball games. And I started playing with my group of buddies on the baseball stadium. And we used to get home with a bunch of money and tips, you know, just going around. And that's how I started, you know, playing. I took circus. I was at the circus and doing playing with my band in different part of the country. And yeah.
Were you like the house band for the circus? So you did like all the
No, it was like a show. You like one or two songs, you know, mm-hmm. little kids, 8, 9 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We did that only a couple of times. But the baseball thing was a big deal because it was like every weekend. So
that's good. Steady yeah. gig at yeah. that age. That's a great thing.
At that age.
Well, let me go ahead and I'm going to play a piece, a clip from the song's called Passage de Nova, if I'm saying that correctly. And let's just take a listen and kind of give you an idea of what Richard's about. So take a listen. What were you using the carvin on there?
Yes, yes.
It's a beautiful sound. Almost yeah. sounds like a steel string. It's that. It has a lot of. It's a nice bright sound.
Yeah. And all the seed sound. It's like it's coming from the guitar too.
Oh, okay. But, so all those pads and stuff yeah, in the background and that yeah, like Rhodes type of.
Yeah. Well, there's some piano stuff there, but like the violin kind of sound. The strings.
Now, was that overdubbed as a second part, or is that coming from? Is it generating from what you're playing?
That was overdubbed. I did it.
So you just did chords on there.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that guitar because you have the carvin with you right now, mm-hmm. and this is what the NS1 is. It what is
NS1? Yeah.
And it's got the hex pickup in it, so it's. Yes. And we were talking a little bit about this before the show, and. It's a chambered body. I want you to explain that a little bit, too. It's chambered as opposed to a hollow body. There is no sound hole on it. And it has a piezo hex pickup in the bridge. And then I want you to explain a little bit. It's a nylon string guitar, too.
It's a nylon string guitar. I was hunting for a nylon guitar that was a synthesizer. At the time, I think the only two available was the Godin and this one with this kind of body. This is like a tele body.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like the carving better than the Godin. I don't know. It's difficult to explain the reason why, but one of the reasons is like because you have so many possibilities with the equalization with the knobs. You have like four knobs for to get the mid range, bass, and treble, which is cool. And
let me describe real quick. I have pictures of it, but let me describe. He has three sets of controls, and they're dual knobs. So in other words, there's a bottom knob and a top knob to it for each one. So the first one that's closest to the bridge, if I'm correct, is your volume.
Exactly.
One is for the acoustic guitar, and the other one's for the synth.
Exactly.
Correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Then the next one, that's the one that's kind of the lower one, the middle one, that's each one of those is a different EQ frequency?
Yeah. Basically, this is a mid-range one.
Okay, he's looking at the lower knob. Okay.
And this is like for bass, and this is for treble.
Okay, so the third one, the concentric knob, the third dual knob, is bass and treble, and then the middle one is mid-range.
Exactly.
Okay, now do me a favor and play a little bit of the guitar and turn the knob down so they can hear the difference in the mid-range.
Okay.
And let me turn you on here so you're good. I'm going to cut your voice mic out for a minute. Now, is that cut or boosted?
That's cut.
Okay, now boost it. I mean, it's okay to exaggerate. I just want to give them an idea with the frequency. And that's why it's resonating through the room a little bit. I'm sure that you probably would boost the mids if you were going direct to the board or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Yeah. And this is just treble.
It's got plenty of gain in it.
Yeah.
That's active, right? There's a battery for that?
Yes, there's a battery.
Okay, and then he also has a toggle switch that switches. He has preset sounds on his synthesizer. He uses a Roland synth because it has a hex pickup in the back besides the normal acoustic output pickup for the piezo. And the toggle basically toggles through his sounds. So he uses like three or four sounds for a gig, and then he can just toggle in what he wants.
Exactly, yeah.
Very cool. Guitar gets a great jazz sound. It really, the way you have it set up, it's really nice, but it's like an acoustic jazz. It gets a really interesting. Now, the other thing is with this guitar, besides the hex pickup, you have that set up. But now, one of the other things you were talking about, comparing it with the Godin, what kind of a neck is that? Is that more like a traditional classical neck?
Yeah.
Or is it more like a hybrid electric guitar neck or acoustic?
It is like a traditional. I mean, the width and the feel.
Is it like a Ramirez where it's a kind of a squared neck, or is it a rounded?
You can look by yourself. It's not totally rounded. It's more has like a flat here.
It's flat on the back, but it's a little rounded on the side, but it's flat. But it's like more of a traditional classical.
Exactly.
And is that a classical width? Is that a standard classical width? It's not a narrower one.
No, no.
Because I know both Godin, Carvin, I think, does it too, and then Taylor. They make a classical with a narrower neck for the contemporary players that are not normally classical players.
Exactly.
But that gets a lot of sustain. That's a nice...
I love this instrument.
Now, he's using, just so you know, the amp that he's using for all the guitars is his practice amp that he uses. It's a Fender Mustang 3, and it's got all the presets in there, so it's easy for him to get different sounds out of it. But that it does get a nice jazz sound. And I'm trying to remember which one has that sound for it. Was All You Need, is that the the full, that is that solo guitar, like two guitars?
Yes.
Okay, let me play that clip because that I think you're using that guitar.
I'm using this guitar.
All right, let me play that, and you can that'll give you a chance to switch to the. He's got some great guitars here. You're gonna love them. So I'm gonna play All You Need, and take a listen to this. You can get an idea of what he's doing, and you get the get an idea of those sounds. That's a beautiful piece. Now, let me ask you, that's just two guitars, right?
Yes.
And that's just the two of the carving.
Of the carving, yes.
And it's a great, a great, great sound. And now, that's direct through the board, right?
Yes.
And you're just using a little bit of chorusing or something?
Yeah, I use a little bit of delay, and I have a Cubase, and I have a bunch of
and you're just going through the pickup. You're not using the. You're not miking it.
I'm not miking at all. I went directly to the mm-hmm. board.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now let's go a little bit into your in terms of your influences and stuff. Mm-hmm. You're from the Dominican Republic, so what was the music scene back there? What was big when you were a kid?
Well, when I was I lived in Japan for 2 years.
Wow!
You know, yeah, and. That's what I started playing rock, basically. So when Jimi Hendrix came out, and I was like right there.
Now he was. Did you hear him in Japan?
No, no. I mean, I was right there in the era.
But it was big, and he was big in Dominican.
You know, Japan has always been like really. Up to date with the music and everything. So when the albums came out, like Cream or Jimi Hendrix, they went like straight to Japan. So I started listening to Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix, and that was my earliest.
So when they came out, you were in Japan at the time.
I was in Japan at the time, yeah.
But what was before that? What was the music scene in the Dominican Republic? And what kind of music was popular?
Yeah, we're talking about 1966. I went to Japan in 1967. So, you know, Beatles and things like that.
So the Beatles were big in 66
in Dominican Republic. In fact, I got the first when it first came out, I got the first copy because my sister was studying in New York, and she brought it to
Dominican
Republic.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So in the Dominican Republic, everything is late, you know. Big influence with the Beatles.
Well, what was it, now? What was what type of music came from? What kind of music were you exposed to that was from the Dominican Republic besides what was imported? I mean, I presume there was a lot of.
Well, the Dominican Republic, the main music there is the merengue.
Merengue.
Yeah, and also they have the bachata, that was. Bachata became famous with Juan Luis Guerra.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very famous musician over there, all over the world, in matter of fact. But I, you know, my brother and sister, they were like into rock and rock and roll, so I started out with rock.
So how did you get into jazz?
Into jazz. Well, in Japan, my father used to take us, you know, to different venues and where they have the jazz bands. So that was my first kind of taste of jazz. Then in high school, I got a record of Jimmy Smith on organ, and I was playing organ at the time. So like on my rock band, it's called Karma, we record an album, all original compositions, and I was playing guitar and organ. So I started listening to jazz, you know, almost at the same time with the rock, and then we had this group. It was called the Proyecto Fusión. It was like fusion music.
Oh, okay.
And the band was kind of big over there, to the point that when Chick Corea and Paco Lucía went to Dominican Republic, and they were looking for a band to open, you know, the show. So they looked for us. We were like the biggest.
You opened for them. That's cool.
Yeah. So that was cool.
And this was before you went to Musicians Institute.
Yeah, that was before. It was like just before I came to L.A. So that was like one of the last concerts that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Opening for Chick Corea and Paco de Lucía.
So when you came into Musicians Institute, you were already... you were already involved in fusion, so you were doing fusion.
I was in fusion, Alan Holdsworth, and I started to listen to Joe Pass before I came here a lot. I got a collection of cassettes, you know, with the solo recordings, and I said, "Wow, you know, Joe Pass." And then when I met him and start taking classes with him, and it just changed my life.
When you were younger, did you take formal lessons? Did you study music theory then?
I studied piano in Japan, and I went to the conservatory only for 1 year in Dominican.
Okay, so you most of your theory, arranging, all of that came at the Musicians Institute.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I want to point out that Richard does more than just guitar playing. I mean, he obviously plays more than one instrument, but like he was commissioned to do a piece. It's called the Jazz Suite for Tuba.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was that for just solo tuba, or was that for with orchestra?
It was conceived for a tuba trio, and
a trio.
Yeah. And that was commissioned by Fred Green, which is perhaps one of the most recorded tuba player in here in Los Angeles. And he has recorded more than his last time I counted, like 750 movies or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been all kinds of movies. And he's like my best friend because he's married with a dear good friend from high school. And we always spend Thanksgiving with them. And he asked me if I can write something for him. So I wrote a suite.
Mm-hmm.
And the world premiere took place in USC.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool because they have all kind of classical musicians, you know, all the musicians from the L.A. Philharmonic were there.
Now, when you were writing for tuba, did you think in terms of guitar? Did you write it on guitar or write it on keyboard?
I write some of them on guitar, other I write on keyboard.
Did you give them some phrasing that was like a guitar phrase for and put it on tuba?
Yes.
Well, that's good because that's a different sound, and that type of phrasing would give it a different character than most people would think, like traditional tuba, which would be like a classical type of thing. But
I have like three or four clips in YouTube, just the tuba trio.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen.
I have to check that out.
Yeah.
Also, I have to mention that just to give you an idea of the scope of Richard's career, he he won an award for honor for from UNESCO and the Dominican Ministry of Culture for International Jazz Day. You did like a special thing for that?
No, it was just, I was just home here in Los Angeles, and I got the call and say, "Oh, you've been honored by UNESCO." I was like totally surprised, and I actually couldn't go and get the trophy. So my sister
accepted it for
accepted
you.
It from
but
me.
That's I mean that's very cool.
Yeah.
I mean it just shows how far your music's. You, takes you.
Yeah.
I mean, especially you're here, and they're like all of a sudden calling you. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
Now, going into the Musicians Institute, tell me a little bit because you were a classmate of Monique's, mm-hmm. and but you were going in there. What was your experience? I mean, that must have been an interesting experience.
Oh my God, you have to understand that I come from a very very small town, mm-hmm. La Vega, Dominican Republic. Where there is nothing in music or anything. And for me, coming to Hollywood and experience Musician Institute was incredible. I came by myself. My wife and the kids, they stay over there for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it so much that I decided to stay. So we've been here for like, 30.
So you were already married when you went over to.
So am I, yes.
It's like, honey, you need to come back home. Well, I'm going to jam here a little bit more.
No. That is exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you're hanging around Joe Pass, Joe DiOrio, and Scott Henderson, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. But, I mean, was it hard? Because you didn't have, you said you had a little bit of training in Japan, but coming in there, was it easy to get into the theory classes and the arranging classes, or was it difficult?
No, I did a bunch of self-study. I taught myself music to write music before I came here.
Oh, okay.
So and in fact, they put me in the advanced. With advanced class, so my classmates, they were like Norman Brown and all the best players.
Well, your teachers alone, I mean, besides Joe Scott and Joe DiOrio, you also studied under Les, right? Did you do any classes with Ron Eshte?
No, I never had the pleasure to, but I've seen him playing many, many times, and mm-hmm. I love his playing, yeah. He's a great guitar player.
Great guy,
And great guy, too.
So you took, besides the guitar classes, did you take arranging there? What else did you take?
No, the arranging. So what happened was that after I finished MI, I started playing in wine bars and restaurants, just solo guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've been doing that ever since the 80s. Until now, mm-hmm. I always play. Always have like some kind of a steady gig. I started playing in this place called Studio Grill, that was right across the street from Warner Brothers in Santa Monica. I was there for 4 years, and then I decided that I needed to expand my knowledge in music, and I went to Los Angeles City College.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there for 4 years. It's supposed to be a 2 years course. And but I, instead of taking all these other classes, I just took every single classes that there were available. So I took like trumpet class. I took percussion class.
Mm-hmm.
I study arranging. I study piano, classical piano, for a couple of years. And The trumpet thing helped me a lot for the arrangement, the arranging part, because...
Is that why you took it, just to learn the more about the instrument to write for it?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And I'm very into, you know, metal, brass music, and so I really enjoy that tuba music that I did for Fred. And one of the things I'm doing right now, I'm rearranging for a larger band.
Mm-hmm. But when you studied there in college, the type of like, for example, the you were saying was trumpet. You studied trumpet.
I studied trumpet for.
But was that classical trumpet or like big band trumpet?
No, it's a beginner trumpet. I was like the fourth trumpet.
Was the focus of the school classical or?
With more classical, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because it's interesting. Now you've. I presume the jazz suite for tuba, okay, that's kind of an interesting, it's kind of its little thing, but have you arranged for a big band?
I have.
And how did you learn that? Because that's a whole different
gig. That's a whole different thing, yeah. So I took a big band arrangement, and some of the arrangement that I did, that were performed by the studio jazz band over there. I wrote about five arrangements for big band.
But where did you learn it? Did you learn it from Musicians Institute?
No, and LACC.
So they had they had stuff where you could do big band. Okay.
That was, I think that perhaps the most knowledge I have learned about guitar playing has been because of the big bands, because I play a lot with big bands.
You do. Okay.
So while I was there, I was in two big bands on Monday and Thursday. You know, I did that for like 2 years. So that was, and since I was a guitar player for the studio band, so they called me for all their big bands gigs and stuff. And so I did a lot of big band gigs. You know.
So you picked it up from there. But that's an interesting thing, because that type of arranging, the way you voice the trombones, the trumpets, and the saxophones, it's a whole different gig than even pop music, though they use some of those riffs and voicings, but it's so different than classical, the way classical brass is set up. And to me, it's an art. It's hard to find good places that you can learn that. Though a lot of people, like you yourself, it's from just doing it. You learn a lot from just playing those charts and stuff.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed how much you can learn from them.
Those charts by Sammy Nestico, oh man, they're tough to play. But it was a very good experience. I wish I could, you know, play a big band, but they kind of disappear these days, you know.
It's hard. There's some. I've seen more retirees playing as musicians. A lot of them are older doctors and lawyers that played years ago. There's a group over in Culver City I know of that's a big band. One of my friends played guitar for them, and they just play like every Thursday night, and they just do big band charts. And occasionally over by the Musicians Union, they'll have like a gathering of musicians, and they'll just play charts just to keep up.
Well, talking about big bands, one of the accomplishments that I feel more, you know, humble about it, and was the Oti Festival. Mm-hmm. The Oti Festival is a song festival, and out of 750 composition, they chose. They choose my song, and I did all the arrangement for the big band, and that was in Los Angeles, and I won the second place. But then the year after, in 1991, I did the same thing, and I won the first place. Since we got the first place, we went to Miami for the international competition, and I directed the orchestra over there. So, you know. And
did you just direct, or did you play? Did you play guitar?
No, I just direct, you know.
Well, that must have been fun.
Yeah. So.
So you even learned conducting.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy thing to do.
It's not an easy thing to do. Yeah.
Well, let me play another clip. I'm going to play, and I'm going to ask you what you did on this, how you set this up. This is called Burning Con Sabor.
Burning Con Sabor, yeah.
Let me play this clip, and I want to talk a little bit about what you did on it. So here's Burning Con Sabor. Now, there's some interesting things that's going on and that I'm hearing in the background. Mm-hmm. You're playing, you go into this, I presume you're using the carbon on this.
The carbon, yeah.
But there's something following it, and it doesn't sound like a guitar. It sounds almost like a, it's not a, like an electric piano, but it has that kind of a dark texture to it, and it kind of, it comes after the guitar. Is that the synth?
Yeah, but probably.
Because it's kind of tracking what you're playing. It's not like as if you overdubbed and played another part to it, and then it kind of these like really deep swells that come out. Now I presume the strings up on the top that you hear at the very end—that's the synth.
That's the synth. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing most of that on that guitar.
On that guitar, yeah.
And there was how many tracks were you using? Was it there was the lead, obviously, but was there a one or two rhythm play?
Probably about three tracks.
Three tracks?
Yeah.
Because there was some really interesting interplay that you were doing in there.
Yeah, thanks.
And that that synth thing, again, that the Carvin has a hex pickup output, so he can plug in interface with any of the synth modules that are out there for that use that type of hex setup. It's like a DIN plug or something in the back. I have a picture of it. I took a picture of it. But it's an interesting sound, and you get a nice space to it, and then there's an echo on it too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then that's all done. You ran the guitar direct and the synthesizer direct. All that's in post? You don't do any of those effects live when you're recording. I know you do that live when you're performing.
Yeah. I record that album, just almost everything straight to the board, using all the effects. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, what do you use as your... Now, you brought this amp in and it has all the effects built into it, but what do you use when you record? You must be using... What type of effects? Do you use any pedals?
My pedal board is not too big. I use like a Super Chorus. I have the Boss Distortion. I have the whole reverb. What's it called? And the tube screamer.
Tube screamer.
Yeah. And a volume pedal. That's about it.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Well. Now that you've grabbed this, the Ibanez, let's talk a little bit about this guitar. This is an Ibanez, back when Ibanez used to make copies of the Gibsons. This is an Ibanez Birdland, and as you call it, it's the lawsuit version, because it's pretty close to a Birdland, and the quality of these guitars. I remember when these came out, they were just exactly, they're well made. And they're actually collectible now. They're very collectible.
Yeah, this is.
And this is stock, right? It's the same pickups. You didn't. Yeah. You haven't done anything to this guitar.
The only thing was the bridge. The original bridge was this movable one, and I took it to this guy from Yugoslavia. I forgot his name, but he was a very good guitar maker, and he put like stock.
He made so you basically made it so it doesn't move, the bridge doesn't move.
So it doesn't move, yeah.
So. But it's still a tunematic. It's still a tunematic bridge, and then mm-hmm. those are the Ibanez humbuckers.
Yes,
on it.
Yeah.
So it's got a nice sound.
Yeah.
I'm gonna when he starts playing, I'm gonna mute his mic for a minute so you can just hear the straight from the amp because it resonates in here. It's a beautiful sounding guitar. And we're almost out of time. I want to talk about this one Strat that he brought in. He brought two Strats. And I'll have pictures of those up for you guys to take a look at. Okay, here he goes. He's tweaking the amp right now. Okay, what? That's a beautiful sounding guitar. It's a great song. Now, we're running. I told you to go by fast. Really. What year is this guitar? This is
77?
77? 1977.
Yes.
Now, I do want to talk a little bit, and this is just, I can't stress enough how beautiful this guitar is. But we're running out of time, and then he brought this Strat in that he had worked on. Tell us a little bit about this guitar. The Strat, because you had some custom work done to it. This guy.
Oh, the Strat. Oh, okay. Okay. This.
I know. I wanted to. I we're running out of time. That's why. But the.
Okay. Let me take the guitar.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry to make him switch in the middle of it. The I'll hand him this guitar. Here. These are beautiful. Now he had while he's setting up this other guitar, this one Strat, he also has a 1979 Strat here, Sunburst, that's stock. It's one with the bullet truss rod on it. And it fades, instead of a Sunburst to black, it's a Sunburst to brown, and I got pictures of it. But this guitar, this cream colored one, and they both look like they're ash bodies on them. This guitar, I want him to describe what he did and the pickups that he put on it, and most especially who recommended these pickups to him. That's the great part of the story.
This guitar is 73, and I bought it around 79, so it was almost new when I bought it. Mm-hmm. And this is the guitar that I brought to MI. So this guitar has been with me on, so many years. I love this guitar. I was watching one of those concerts in MI. It was by Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. And I brought the guitar to me, and he played my guitar. And I asked him, what do you think I should do, to improve the sound? And at the time, in the early 80s, the Marshall,
was he using DiMarzio's back then?
I don't know, but he recommended he recommended the HS3 mm-hmm. and HS2, and apparently they people still, you know, look for those pickups. So I put the HS3. He recommended the HS3 for the neck position, mm-hmm. and the HS2 for the bridge position. And the middle pickup is the one that came with the guitar.
Right, right.
And I also changed the 5-switch position.
You put a 5-position switch in instead of the normal 3.
Instead of normal, yeah.
And then your bridge is a different bridge. That's not a standard. It's got the 2 screws. But this, who
put that this? Was John Carruthers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He did all the work for this guitar and for the other Strat too.
And this one too has the bullet truss rod too. It has mm-hmm. a bullet truss rod. It's a nice neck. I was trying it before the show, and it's a rosewood with a maple. But the bullet truss rods have the slot behind on the back of the neck where they put the truss rod. It's not like a lot of the smaller headstock Strats. Where they have the truss rod put in before they put the fretboard on, so that it's a solid maple on the back. This one doesn't. It's like if you saw a maple neck guitar, it has that little wood, rosewood slot in the back.
That's exactly what it is.
It's a beautiful guitar. Go ahead and just noodle around on it a little bit so they get an idea what it sounds like. Because this is his go-to axe. This was the one he used when he was playing with Joe Pass, Joe DiOrio, and Scott Henderson.
What a cuss. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
So far.
How does that switch it to the clean sound and give them an idea of these pickups so they can hear what these pickups sound like? He's switching presets on the amp. That's what here you go.
Okay. So this is a neck. It's the middle one.
Is that that's both. That's the middle and the neck, right?
Middle and the neck.
Okay.
Okay. This is just the middle. And this is the middle and the bridge. Really crispy.
It's got a nice sound, yeah. And then the bridge one.
Not so far.
That's a great, great sounding guitar. And that's it. So you had Carruthers do the bridge on it, and you had those pickups. When did you have that done? While you were at Musicians Institute or later?
No, about maybe 20 years ago. Yeah.
Well, okay, so it was after you were... That's a great sounding guitar. Yeah. And this is your go-to. This is your main studio axe, too.
Yeah.
No, that's a beautiful, beautiful guitar. Well, I told you we'd go by fast. Real quick, I want to mention www.richardgomez.com, and you can get some information on there also, too, about where are you playing? Is there a place people can go see you?
Yeah, I'm playing every Friday in Bino Wine and Tapas Grill restaurant. It's in Encino.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that gig for about 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Is that solo, just by yourself?
It's just solo guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about that gig is that, you know, if I have, some other engagement, you know, I can send some of the other guys. We're 5 guys playing there.
5 guys, so you substitute for each other. That's very cool.
And I have a trio, a jazz trio, that I'm putting together right now. And but the most work that I've been doing lately is the arrangement for the 7-piece band that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on that.
Well, as I said, you can check out www.richardgomez.com. And I want to thank you so much for coming down here. It's great. I love this stuff. We have to get into more stories about Musicians Institute, but I got to have Monique here. And I want to thank Monique also, too, for putting us together and making this show happen. And your lovely wife, Mary Lee, it's a pleasure. Yeah. I know I have the mic. She asked me to keep the mic off, but I just wanted to thank you so much for being here. I'm going to end with a clip from the All You Need album, The Look of Love, which is a great arrangement that you did on this. And if I'm correct, you're using the carvin on this one?
Yes.
You're using the carvin, so we know what it is. Mm-hmm. And then also one thing totally I was so proud of today. I got a call from a person from Uganda, Africa, that was listening to the show. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to give him a shout-out. His name's Frank Tyler Mildred from Uganda. So I just wanted to give him a shout-out. Thanks for listening to the show. But we're actually across the Atlantic. I mean, we have some listeners in England and stuff, but this is a first for me from Uganda.
Wow.
So I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, I'm going to play this clip, The Look of Love. Thank you again so much. It's a pleasure to have you. And you're working on a new album now, so we'll have to have you come back with the new one.
Okay.
And I'm going to go take some pictures of these guitars so you can see what these beautiful guitars look like. But here, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week. Here's The Look of Love.